Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together.
Great, Nathe. Thank you very much for joining us today to the Humans in AI Share podcast with me. I'm very happy to have you here. I feel like you're such an ambitious, very young entrepreneur. You achieved a lot in over 2 years, right, of being a good tech, your AI transcription company.
So I would like to actually understand how, if you could share a little bit how the whole story started before you did another, I know you co-founded another startup related with traveling and sustainability, and now you're doing this AI transcription company. So yeah, how did it start, all that entrepreneurial journey?
Oh, like in the way beginning? It's just happened. It's never really been, it's a bit of a fun story. I found out that I apparently always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I found like an old USB stick in my mom's attic at some point where I wrote like a little assignment in seventh grade where it was like, how does your life look in your late 20s, I think. And in that, I had written that I had built a company and I think I'd even written that it was in travel. But it just happened, just like opportunistic back then, the view of being your own boss. But mostly I like to overachieve, and I called myself impatiently ambitious, meaning I'm hyperactive. And I like when you're an entrepreneur, your efforts accumulate rather than if you're an employee, you make an extra effort and then tomorrow you get into work and maybe you're in the same spot. But it just absolutely accumulates whenever you go the extra mile as an entrepreneur. And that's just so nice. If I go the extra mile today, I'll benefit from it next year in some way. And I love that. I really love that.
Okay. So, we already talked before about what I mentioned about you build a company in travel and now about AI. So what core values or vision has remained constant? Like you still are using them?
I think definitely I spend more time when I talk to external partners or in conversations like this, I usually spend more time talking about culture than I do about anything else. And it's something we really build from the ground up in Good Tape that we had, like it's written somewhere that humans will always come first. So if we have a goal to reach tomorrow and someone's not feeling well, I'm not going to force them to come to work and that sort of stuff. And we very early, I don't think there's any other company that's less than 2 years old. I think we did it when we were 1 year old. We wrote a culture manifesto of this is how we approach work and life. So we really pride ourselves in being a place where people like to come in and they look forward to coming to work on Monday. So much so that even like I have to sometimes tell people to leave. We've coded like our dashboard in the office at 7 every evening. It automatically plays like it turns the volume all the way up and tells people, are you aware of why you're here? Is it maybe better to leave and come back tomorrow with a fresh creative brain? Just to like really value creativity rather than just hours. And that's definitely a thing that I've taken through everything I've ever done. The focus on output rather than input.
So that's, it's a very kind of Nordic culture or?
Mm. Yeah, very. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you call yourself impatiently ambitious. What is the definition of ambition for you? What do you mean with that actually?
Everyone in the office, it's even my status on Slack that I just have written more in capital letters. Like I always want more of everything. And it's a mix of ambition and being impatient. I'd love to be where we will be in 3 years. I'd love to be there tomorrow. And then it's just a matter of trying to make it happen as fast as possible. And mixing that with everyone needs to feel good. It's a difficult thing to manage as a leader in a company that you really want results and you want to move fast and you want to just do really big things, but you also want people to love doing it. So that's like a thing. And I think impatiently ambitious just explains it quite well, that I am very impatient and I am very ambitious. And those two together is like a mix. 2 + 2 = 5.
And where is that hunger or drive come from?
Good question. It's always been like a, not to get too philosophical, but I'm like, I want maximum out of life. I want absolutely max. I don't want to miss a day. And it's nice, like a friend asked me the other day, and it's not just like a random quote, but a friend did really ask, like in a conversation that you sometimes have with your friends, where you're like, what would you do if you won the lottery tomorrow? And I was the only one that said I wouldn't change anything. I would just have more money in the bank. I really love what I'm doing, like really thoroughly love what we're doing and how we're doing it. So it is like the need. And it's also something that I've learned to manage, because it can also be a stress factor. I used to feel like taking a day off was a massive cost, because then that day was maybe 12 hours that I didn't work. And then what if in a year I would have needed those 12 hours? So it's been a lesson to learn to manage that eagerness and impatience. It can be dangerous, I think.
I guess that's also because you are young, so that's more energy, right? More ambition. I think it's the best moment to start entrepreneurship when you are young, actually. Because of the energy, yeah. You don't even have it when you get older. You will have it, but not as much. It's a natural thing. Let's talk a little bit about building good tape. Why good tape?
Yeah. And it's because, so we're actually spun out of a digital newspaper. So they had a lot of journalists. And then there's an expression in journalism. If you're a journalist and you interviewed me and I'm a politician, and then you get back to your colleagues, then they ask, did you get some good tape? Which is basically, did you get some value recorded? So good tape is like an expression of value on tape, that you got that. And then we just took it. And I think it's very neat, like good tape. And also, it aligns really well with how we do things.
Mm. Talking about GoodTape, GoodTape is an AI transcription company, right? So you said that GoodTape saved millions, billions, trillions of hours. What do you mean with that?
What I really like about GoodTape and comparing it to other things I've done is that it's a really simple value prop. Like it's, you just very tangibly save time. Whereas before, you would have to spend about 4 to 5 hours if you were to transcribe an hour of interview. And most journalists did that. And maybe they spent 10 hours a week just actually being a robot, just like audio in and then movement out of your fingers. And then GoodTape automates that. So you can get it in a few seconds even. So it's just like we sell time. And it's something we're very aware of, that we don't necessarily sell transcription. We sell save time. And that's a really neat thing to sell. And it has a lot of value and a lot of different value to different users. Because you can basically go two ways about it. Either you can say, oh, I save time, so therefore I can produce more. Or you can say, oh, I save time, so therefore I don't have to do as much to create the same output. And it's two different paths. And that it's basically up to the user what they want to do with that time.
Okay. For what I understood, GoodTape is an open source AI? Or
no. So we're built on an open source, it's called an ASR model. So it basically, we're built on an open source model that does like the core of the conversion of audio to text. But at our current stage, it's actually a very small part of our technology. And we've built agnostically, meaning we can switch out that part really fast. So it's like the good metaphor for it is that's the PlayStation game, but we've built the PlayStation. So we can switch that out quite fast.
Okay. So you say that you've got from 0 to 2.5 million users in under 2 years. Can you share a little bit the story behind the journey with all the lessons learned and the challenges that you've been through? Because that's not a small achievement, I have to say. So congratulations as well. But yeah, we'd like to, yeah, if you can share a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think we benefited from being like early movers on it. It was new technology when we launched. And it had the same, like if you look at ChatGPT, why it spread so fast is because it had the biggest wow moment when you tried it out first time and you went, wow. And we had that same effect on journalists, particularly. And then it basically just spread like wildfire. Word of mouth is like massive for us, because there's always been tools that worked in English, always, for at least a few years, because there's been some American companies that have invested millions and millions into training models on English. So a lot of users knew that this technology existed, but they'd learned that, oh, it doesn't work in my language. And then now finally came GoodTape, and it finally worked in Danish or British, not British, but like Dutch or German or French. And that just really spread. And it's a nice thing, because we didn't have to educate people that the technology existed. We just had to educate them that now technology existed that worked in your language. So definitely like word of mouth was big. One of the big challenges we've had is actually from the opportunity that we quickly saw that we also got pulled into other verticals. So we were built out of a digital newspaper, were for journalists, that was a communication. But then we quickly saw, oh, wow, there's a lot of academic researchers, there's a lot of lawyers, health professionals that use us. And then it's difficult when you're a bootstrap company in particular, and we haven't taken any venture funding, to manage your focus so that you don't try and do 10 things and then you only do 10 things. All 10 things you only do, then 10%, to say we're going to do one thing and we're going to do it 100%, has been really difficult, because it's really difficult, especially for someone that's impatiently ambitious, to say no to that opportunity, no to that opportunity, no to that opportunity. But it's been a big learning. It's really been a big learning. And it's something we integrate into everything we do and decide, is the value of a no can be bigger than the value of a yes. And it's something you can see from the tool as well. It's very simple.
So I'm very actually interested in the part of that you said you bootstrapped. You're still bootstrapping, I guess. Why do you decide to don't take a VC fund or investor or angel investor?
Yeah. So it's a very interesting time to have a conversation, because I am considering both ways. We stayed bootstrapped because we felt it was right, and because we could see we could grow without venture. And just to maintain autonomy, move at our own pace. Again, humans before anything else. To just say, we want to be happy. We don't want to be stressed. We want to build at our own pace. We want to do what we feel is right. But then again, there's also a point where you have to continuously, as a CEO, keep track of what is the right strategy. And sometimes the market can determine what the pace of a company needs to be. So let's say we're the only one that stays bootstrapped, and then all of our competitors raise $100 million. It's going to be really hard for us to compete. And everything AI is just, there's just so much money being pushed into everything. Meaning amount of money is more or less directly translated to speed. Like how fast are people developing? How fast are people building big campaigns, spreading their brand? Which is why we're definitely considering what's the right path for us at the moment. We're a profitable company. We've been profitable very quickly. So we've just grown. So we don't need to take venture funding. So it's basically just to move faster.
That's congratulations, guys. I know that right now you are in a moment that you are thinking about it. I don't know if you have thought about US, about the Silicon Valley thing, because AI is all booming there, very big. Have you thought about maybe move with your team there, or what are your thoughts about it?
The short answer is no. Also, I do really see some differences in how companies are building, and it's a big advantage for us. A major part of our value prop is data privacy and data security. So when we very clearly say no data ever leaves the EU, because we have to comply to GDPR regulation, that's a big value prop for a lot of large enterprises. Also, the fact that we say we never train on any data, we'll never look at it, we'll never access it, is like it's almost rare to see an AI startup say, no, we won't train on any data. So yeah, I haven't considered moving to Silicon Valley. I like Denmark. I like the Scandinavian way. And I think there's a big shift happening at the moment. I can also hear some large American VCs have reached out to me, and I can hear that their focus is also shifting towards Europe. And that's like a big data point as to where you want to be. Where are they looking? And they're definitely looking to, particularly Scandinavia, actually. So that it's a very interesting time to talk venture.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that the south of Europe is go too much about entrepreneurship. So it's mostly is in the Nordics. Talking a little bit about data and privacy. So you've got millions of users trusting your transcription platform, right? So what internal discussions or dilemmas have you faced around privacy and data use?
I have a really good example that a lot of our competitors could do, like a lot of generative AI things, like they could do a summary or you can interact with your transcription. They could do that really fast, but they could only do that really fast because they just made an API integration to ChatGPT. And I can make that until Monday. I can do that until tomorrow. I'm not even technical. But for us to do the same thing, because we're so adamant on maintaining data security and privacy, that we went the long way around hosting our own large language model. And that's really expensive and really difficult to do. But we made that entire stride so that we sit on the infrastructure to be able to still maintain the value prop of this is the most secure place you can go. So it definitely slowed us down. But I feel like it's the same as fast food. If you want to do something, if you want something really proper, you can't have it in a minute. You have to wait a little bit. So I hope our users really understand that.
Yeah. So, well, as a leader, what have you learned about leading your team in high pressure and high growth environments, like, for example, with Good Tape?
Yeah. I think it is definitely a Scandinavian thing, but I also think it's a generational thing. The approach of the human first, like a cliche that everyone always bullies me about, is that I really believe that whatever the user sees, that they can feel if the person that made it was smiling when they made it. Like the best example is a sales email. If I get a sales email, I'm not spiritual at all, but I am certain that I can feel whether the guy that wrote that email was sitting like this, just going, or whether he was like, oh, I need to reach my target until tomorrow. I really need this sale. So really like humans first and saying, I'm going to get more value the happier the people that work with me are, also means putting it into structure and investing time in it. Every single Monday morning, we talk about how we're feeling. And it can sound a little bit weird, but it's also a productivity thing. Because if I have a colleague that says, oh, I had a tough weekend and my grandma was hospitalized, then I, as a human, if I'm very empathetic, won't go, oh, there's something bothering him. Is it because I didn't reach that deadline for him last week? I'm mitigating all of that by allocating 1 hour that where people can just say, I feel off this week. It has nothing to do with you guys. Ask me anything. I am just a little down. So I also think it's a generational thing because a lot of our team members are also young. The oldest is 40, I think, and most are like around 30. And that generation, including myself, we just need a little bit more time to talk about our feelings. Like, we just like to talk about our feelings and say, hey, blah, blah, blah. And it's just allowing for that, I think, is the way forward. Yeah.
I completely understand you, actually. I guess it's a generational thing because I also a bit just like the same. Like, that's why this kind of podcast is humans in AI, right? Not a human, you know? So, don't worry. Yeah, it's all about humans here. Good. We are online. That's good. Yeah. So, I personally, I like your leadership style, but how would you define it yourself? If you have to say in three words is easier than one word, like in three words, like, how would you describe it? Or three separate words. It doesn't have to be in a sentence.
Yeah. I would say empathetic is the biggest one. Then optimistic and like respect. Because we had a chat when we do an offsite, and I said, I'd like to sometimes be more okay. It's also important that I share how I feel as a leader. So I said, I'd like to sometimes be more okay with putting my foot down. And they said, you can, because we respect you so much. And that's a thing of, that was just such a nice thing to like the way that it was said, it wasn't a you can because you're the manager. It's like a respect thing. And that is earned. And I think it's earned because of the like listening and prioritizing. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel when your team is happy, the work is better too, right? So you as the leader, you are the first one who has to show the way, okay, I'm not fine, I let you know. And then as well, they can be open to you, say, I'm not fine. So today, maybe I'm not doing that good. So it's kind of all about communication. And I really like this kind of open communication of the way that you lead.
Mm.
So talking a little bit about community and impact, because obviously you've got a big community with GoodTape, right? All the people who are using your transcription and UI transcription is a big thing, right? So who are the unexpected communities or use cases you've discovered along the way that you didn't expect that they would even use it?
Like, I've been surprised about how homogenous the need or the opportunity to solve something has been. The fact that the same tool works really well for a journalist that an investigative journalist that does like an in-depth interview, but then at the same time, one of our customers is the courts of Santiago de Chile, where it runs inside of the courts. And that's a really weird mix. So like the use case, it's just the fact that the same tool can satisfy so many different use cases, and people will come up with creative ways to use it. We have a ministry in Denmark that use it, and they don't do any interviews, but they just transcribe. I can see that you have a competitor transcribing this call, but they transcribe all of their meetings, and then they put it into a shared ChatGPT, and then they can interact with basically all of their knowledge, which is really cool and not something we came up with. So it's like, when you build something so simple and neat, people will find a way to integrate it. And that's really fun for us to listen to, especially when we talk about product roadmap. Then we're like, oh, okay, now we've heard this 20 times. We might develop an app. Like, for example, if we hear so many people say, oh, I take this app, the recorder app on Apple, it works like shit, but then I plug it into GoodTape. And then you're like, oh, okay, maybe we should use that as input and develop an app.
So GoodTape is the main audience is the journalist?
It used to be. And we are in a fun situation also. And it goes into the talk about going venture versus staying bootstrap. Because if you stay bootstrap, you have 100 points to throw at something. And if you go venture, you have 1,000 points. And let's say each vertical requires 100 points. Then I can add more verticals and say, oh, now we're for journalists and academic researchers. So it's a resources question. And it'll also come down to communication, because you really want to be, I'd much rather the be everything to someone rather than something to everyone. If we want to be like, oh, this is for me. And that's difficult to do for everyone.
Yeah, you want to have that niche and that particular audience that they completely embrace what you're doing. And yeah, making them as well feel special. This is just for us. Yeah, that's a very interesting. So you also have an investor role in this, but you invest in Hardtech. Why do you invest in Hardtech? And what do you do in your investor role right now?
So full disclosure, it's not a large amount of money. I've never made a lot of money. It's a very small amount of money. But it's also a little like sweat equity based. And honestly, I'm mostly engaged with that to learn, because whenever you're so ingrained in the software SaaS business models, I feel like there's a huge value to be consumed by going over to hardware, because everything is different. Like, you can't just launch something on Monday. You have to spend a year. And then if you launch something and there's something wrong with it, you have to spend another year. Like, the feedback loops are just significantly longer. Everything is different over there, which is, it's just so interesting to get inspiration from, but also to give inspiration. There's a lot of hard tech companies that are looking to add a software layer. It's something that investors are asking for, and a subscription model to your hardware. So there's definitely also something to give. And then I think hardware is an interesting space, because AI is watering out everything that is software. It's really fast and easy to build something in software, but you can't speed up the same way with hardware. So it's a very interesting space. I can't see myself doing any hardware soon. It looks much tougher than software. It looks really tough, but that's also a good learning. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing. So talking a little bit about vision, the future of AI and beyond, where did you see the biggest opportunity in voice, language, and AI?
I'll share as much as I can because we are working on something big product roadmap-wise. I think the biggest word for me is proactive. When does something provide you value without you having to ask? I think it's going to be a big one. And the difficult part there will be the distinction of when is something relevant to be told? Let's say that you're interacting with ChatGPT and you're asking it a question about something. If ChatGPT then proactively reminds you, oh, you asked me something similar half a year ago, the distinction between when that is relevant for you is very blurry because it might be relevant to you, but not relevant to me. I might get annoyed. So the emulation of when your brain tells you, oh, that reminds me of, that smell reminded me of that movie I watched 3 years ago. If a tool reminds you of the same, that's really annoying. But like the proactive value extraction for me is very top of mind. I think about it every day, all day, how someone is going to perfect that distinction because it's so individual. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it when I don't even have to think about something that it just goes, oh, you should think about this. That's really exciting.
What do you expect from GoodTape in 5 years, how do you want to see GoodTape?
I think our industry is looking into in maybe 2 years, there's going to be a lot of roll up. So someone's going to buy everyone. And I'd love to be that someone to just take everything. And maybe we're going to be one of the ones that get bought. I don't know. But I do definitely see that a lot has popped up. And then what's the right growth strategy? At some point, it's going to be acquisition. So I think that's going to happen in the industry within 5 years. GoodTape alone, if we take GoodTape out of the industry, I think will be much more than a transcription tool, much more, and something we're working very hard on at the moment, which is really exciting and tough.
Yeah, I see a lot of mystery still.
Yeah.
Yeah, something I'm not going to tell you, but there's something very good happening.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So this morning, actually, I'm going to quote something that you said this morning, that you shared this morning, actually. It says, all hail the nerds, the geeks, and the GitHub scholars. They are the future.
It's just, actually, we talk about it often. And I said, I think it was last week at lunch, I said it to the team, one of the things I regret, or one of the things I'd love to be more is a nerd. Like, I'd love to have more eagerness to dive into something that most people would think is boring. I think that's where a lot of the value is hidden. All those small little boring things that can solve something. And I think the mix of a nerd and a commercial person is such a golden interaction and like collaboration. And my favorite people are nerds, just like people that geek out and you can just sense that fire and you're just like, dude, this is so boring, but tell me more. If you say that in the same sentence, dude, you're boring the shit out of me, but I'm really enjoying watching you talk about this. I love that type of people. They just have a different like vibe, energy, aura to them. Yes, I love nerds.
Yeah, I also think like nerds usually people who are very knowledgeable about something, right? About a specific topic. So you can learn a lot from them because they know more about one topic, but they know everything.
Yeah, and the best question is, the best thing to say to a person like that is just tell me more. And just say that until they lose their voice because they'll start like shaking and be like, okay, I'll tell you more. And I love that. Like, I really love that.
Okay, Lasse, so we are already almost closing the interview. It's been an amazing chat. But I've got one open question for you, which is more about, do you want to give an advice for the young entrepreneurs like you? Or would you like to share something that we haven't talked? Or, yeah, feel free.
I really wish someone had sat me down when I was younger and said, dude, you solve all the problems when you're not working. And I know it's a cliche to say, but really the point of at some point adding more hours to your workday is a big like disadvantage. So really prioritizing and treasuring that creative feeling that every entrepreneur has, it disappears at some point around. For me, it's if I work more than, say, 70 hours a week for 3 months, I don't have any creativity left. So prioritizing that and saying, I'm actually going to leave my computer at work this weekend, which feels completely stressful, but it can be the best thing because then you have to write your ideas down in a notebook. And so, yeah, someone to really sit down and say, dude, stop working and start solving problems. And I would have loved someone to say that. And no one said that.
Whoa, that's a beautiful ending. I love it. Thank you very much, Lasse, for this amazing, wonderful conversation. It was very nice to share, like, to have you here and get to know you a bit more, what Good Tape is doing, and a bit about you as well, for sure. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.